company has been Michael Eisner's unwillingness to identify and nurture anyone who might be deemed a successor to him. We believe all Disney shareholders would, like us, be relieved to know that someone very uniquely qualified to head the company was being groomed to replace Mr. Eisner when his contract terminates in 2006. We believe that the Walt Disney Company is the most magnificent entertainment company that the world has ever known, and that it will never be equaled. It is a company full of talented, creative people who value being a part of the business that my father and uncle built. It is a company that deserves to stand alone, to remain independent, as it has always been. On Tuesday, the day after the holiday, Eisner called.
"Good letter, Diane," he said. "If you could just change that last paragraph."
"But Michael," she replied, "you've been there 20 years. Even university presidents don't stay that long."
"Can't you just say you support management?" he persisted.
"I can't say that," Diane said. "I think it's time for you to go. You've done some wonderful things, but it's time."
"What are some of the issues that need to be worked on?" he asked.
"I don't want to get into it, Michael."
"Just give me one thing."
"Okay, the Ovitz thing." The Ovitz firing, followed by the huge payoff, had always grated on Diane. She knew Ovitz had been Eisner's best friend, and by hiring him, she felt Eisner had begun to treat Disney like his own private club.
"Oh, Diane, I can explain that to you," Eisner said. "He didn't really make that much off of it."
He started to explain how Ovitz hadn't sold his options when he could have, but Diane cut him off. "The point isn't how much Michael Ovitz made off it. It's what the Disney company paid out for it. Anyway," she continued, "I just think it's time for you to move out of the way for someone else." She added that she wouldn't have gone about it the way Roy did, but it seems everyone perceives Roy as their hero.
"It's the name," Eisner exclaimed in evident exasperation. "It's that Disney name. We've taken polls and Roy's popularity is so high."
"Well, I don't want you to think that I'm being swept along in the same stream as Roy and Stanley, because I think it's destructive to the company." Eisner seized on this opening.
"Diane, please just change that last paragraph. I'll write it for you."
"Michael!"
"I'll fax you a proposed rewrite of the letter."
Diane had no intention of changing her letter, and in any event, Eisner never sent a fax, and she heard nothing further. She was disappointed that, as time passed, none of the other directors responded to the letter. She thought she'd at least receive the courtesy of an acknowledgement or reply. Though overshadowed by the bid from Comcast, Disney executives faced a potential revolt by institutional shareholders. Roy and Gold, taking as their model Howard Dean's grassroots, internet-based campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination, had launched a website, SaveDisney.com, as the centerpiece of their effort to unseat Eisner. They became the first dissident shareholders to attempt to use the internet to democratize the notoriously unresponsive system of corporate governance. Shareholder democracy, while lauded as the centerpiece of democratic capitalism, had in fact become an oxymoron. With the vast majority of corporations firmly in the grip of their chief executives and acquiescent boards, Roy